This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Yak! As the great basketball philosopher Rasheed Wallace once said, ball don't lie. We're back. It's episode 19 of the Droppin' Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com. Texas basketball is 2-0 in Big 12 play. 2-0 for the first time since 2010-11 season. Think about that for a second. It's been a long time since the Longhorns have been in this position because, A, they haven't really been that good since the 2010-11 season. B, winning on the road in the Big 12 is very difficult, and it's been especially difficult for the last 4 or 5 years when the Big 12 is really taking its position as the premier, in terms of toughness, premier basketball conference in the country. So the Longhorns are 2-0 in Big 12 play, won on the road at Kansas State. We talked about that in the last episode, won by 20 points. Who saw that coming? And then followed it up this recently, most recently on Saturday with a 7-point win over West Virginia, a game that was ugly for much of it, which that's what West Virginia wants to do. They have a big physical front court. That's the way they want to play the game. There's a ton of fouls both ways. Again, that's what West Virginia does. So it was a back and forth and fair, and it was another opportunity for Texas in the second half in a different way than Kansas State. Texas had to go out and make some plays and win a game, a tight game, as West Virginia just wouldn't go away. There were a couple moments in the second half when Texas got up 8 points. Dylan Osokowski had a huge three to put Texas up 8 at one point, and then Texas was ahead 49-41 at one point, and West Virginia just kept bouncing back. And, you know, it was interesting, during that one of those little runs that West Virginia had to get back into the game was when Jackson Hayes was forced to go out of the floor with foul trouble, which is... We've talked about Jackson Hayes on this podcast a lot from the stance of Texas is so much better when he's not in foul trouble. And he was in foul trouble for part of that game. Not terribly surprising given it was his first encounter against West Virginia, who is a big physical front court that fouls a lot, that likes to try to run a bunch of actions to get the ball in the paint with some mismatch type situations, really tries to go at front courts. So it wasn't a big surprise that he was in foul trouble, but the moment he went off the floor, West Virginia went right at Royce Ham and Elijah Mitri Long with some action with James Bolden, one of their best playmaking guards, coming off some curling type screens and things like that, and he had 5 straight points at one point. So just goes back to the importance of keeping Hayes on the floor, especially with Jericho Sims out right now. Texas announced before the West Virginia game that Sims injured his ankle in the practice prior, so that Friday practice. He was in a walking boot on the bench during the game, which anytime a guy injures an ankle, I think normal procedure is to put them in a walking boot. Fortunately for Sims and Texas, Shaka Smart said the MRI came back clean from the standpoint of there wasn't any structural or damage or breaks or anything like that. But it does sound like he had a pretty severe ankle sprain. So we haven't gotten an official word from Texas about his availability for the Oklahoma State game. But based on when he injured it and Smart's description of it, I would be surprised if he played at Oklahoma State, which makes Hayes even more important. Tonight's game sets up as a great one for him to grab a bunch of rebounds, to make an impact. You know, Oklahoma State tends to go with some small lineups, doesn't really have much in the front court in terms of size. So this is an opportunity for him to have a big game. And speaking of big games, Dylan Osokowski had his best game of the season against West Virginia. And it's funny, he brought this up unsolicited at the post-game press conference. You know, I asked him a question about what allowed him to play, you know, make so much of an impact on offense. Early on in the game, he did a good job of backing guys down, using pump fakes to get to the free throw line, finishing well in the paint. something that we haven't always seen from him at times. We've seen him back guys down, but getting to the free throw line and finishing has been a little bit more difficult. He was very good at those things in the first half against West Virginia. And then he had two huge three-pointers late in the game, had a big block and grabbed the ball late after West Virginia grabbed an offensive rebound, which really helped Texas seal that victory. And I can't remember what the question was, but just about his performance. And he brought up Big 12 Media Day. So the media there's a few of us beat guys there interviewing Dylan Osikowski in Kansas City at Big 12 Media Day. And there was a point where, you know, Dylan's got the new haircut. He lost a ton of weight. He looks like a different guy. And some question came up, and Matt Coleman was sitting beside him and interjected that he wants to be known for his jumper this year, not his hair. And that prompted Osikowski to tell us this exchange that he had with Bob Huggins. And basically Huggins was like, you know, whoa, what happened to your hair? Osikowski was like, well, I cut it. And then Huggins was like, well, that's what you were known for. And Osikowski goes, well, I want to be known for my game this year. And Huggins said something on the lines of, I don't believe it. You know, and I'm sure it was Bob's, just his kind of dry type of humor, I would suppose. But Osikowski took offense to that. And he told us, I'm going to circle the West Virginia games this year. To his credit, he had his best game of the season against West Virginia. He was extremely efficient. He played with toughness. He stayed on the floor. He held his own defensively. The way he shot the basketball from perimeter was just, for him, it was the best shot mechanics he can have in terms of being shot ready, catching the ball, using his legs, following through with good technique. It looked like a guy shooting the basketball like he, you know, shooting 40% from beyond the arc this year. So he had his best game of the year against West Virginia, and he said he was going to circle those games. And Shocker Smart was asked about it in the post game, and it was like, he needs to get over that. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he needs those sorts of weird things to motivate him. Well, I guess that's not a weird thing, but maybe he needs those types of, I don't know, personal vendettas against people to get him going in the right direction. But he had his best game. He's not a star. He's not going to be a star on this team. I don't think he's even going to be a focal point consistently on offense, because Texas wants to run as much as it can with its guards, run offense through its guards, and then get into the pick and roll type situation, involve the lob guys or the roll guys like Hayes and Sims. But Osikowski has quietly turned into a solid complementary piece. He's rebounding at a higher level this year. He's blocking more shots. He's coming up with more steals. He's shooting better from three-point range. Across the board, he's been a little bit better of a player this year, and he's doing this while not forcing the issue nearly as much as he did last year. And part of that is Texas is not asking him to, and part of that too is he's playing more under control. He's cut the turnovers the last few games. I believe he only has like one turnover the last four games. And you know, that was a big issue for him earlier in the season. Remember that there was that one game where he had three straight turnovers, trying to back guys into the paint and make a play. So he's quietly turned into a solid complementary piece that gets enhanced as long as Texas guards play well. If they don't play well, they need somebody to really pick up the slack. And I don't know if Osikowski is capable of that, but he showed against West Virginia that he can be a factor down low, and he can be a factor as a catch and shoot guy when he takes quality shots at the right moment with the right mechanics. So Texas handles its business at home against West Virginia in what was basically an ugly, tight game most of the way. But Matt Coleman has a big step back three late in the clock to give Texas some late separation. The Longhorns make the plays down the stretch. That's you could take that finish or that storyline or whatever and probably apply it to a lot of Big 12 games this season, from the sense of that's Big 12. That's Big 12 basketball. There's going to be a lot of tight games. At times, they're going to be ugly. I think the defense in this league is probably further ahead than the offense. If you look at some of these teams around the league, you know, for example, Texas Tech, number one in adjusted defensive efficiency, 96th in offense. Iowa State is actually pretty good in both, top 20 in both. Texas, more defense than offense. Kansas, more defense than offense. Oklahoma, 6th nationally in defensive efficiency, so more defense than offense. They're 71st in offense. And then Kansas State, who was number two before Texas put it on them pretty good in Manhattan, still number five in adjusted defensive efficiency, but 201st in offense. Oklahoma State's going to be another example of that for tonight for Texas. 63rd in defensive efficiency, 137th in offense. This is a league that is shaping up to be defined more by defense than offense. And if you look at the veteran guards or just the guard play in the league, you don't have many of those star veteran players like we're used to seeing. You know, even more most recently as guys like Keenan Evans and Devontae Graham and Frank Mason and Monte Morris, Javon Carter, Daxter Miles. Just think of some of the veteran guards that have moved on from Big 12 basketball. There's not really many of those guys in the league this year. You know, TCU has a couple in junior Jalen Fisher and senior Alex Robinson. Alex Robinson's having a really good start to the season thus far. But you look at Kansas. Kansas doesn't have a senior ball handling guard. I know it has LeGerald Vick, but that's handling the ball and running the show is not his game. His game is being more of a guy that plays off of other people. And, you know, when he's shooting the ball well and playing well, he's a huge piece. But he's not Devontae Graham and Frank Mason in terms of give me the ball late, I'm going to run the show and get things done. Iowa State's got some real good talent in its backcourt. I think it's more youthful than veteran, but it's guys that do have some experience in the league. And I don't think it's any surprise that they're sitting at 12-2 right now, beat Kansas by 17 points at home. You know, it just gets back to guard play. And that's what it gets back to for Texas, is that this league, I don't know if I'd call it wide open, because I think Kansas is still going to play at a high level. You know, there are going to be a bunch of teams that lose by double digits at Iowa State this year. Iowa State looks like the real deal, and that place is always a tough place to play. Texas Tech's been off to a strong start, but its non-conference schedule outside of a few games was extremely weak, so we'll see what they look like as they get deeper into conference play. So I don't know if it's wide open, but there is a cluster of teams all kind of grouped together. And when you consider that so much of this league right now is defined by defense as opposed to offense, and you look at the guard play, it's what it gets back to for Texas. If its guards play well, it's going to win games. If the Texas guards don't play well, they could lose to anybody in the league. And that includes tonight at Oklahoma State. I know Texas fans are going to look on paper and say, oh, this is a win. You know, this is a win for Texas. Excuse me, man. My allergies are just driving me absolutely insane right now. Cedar, whatever. I don't know what it is. The weather changing. But it's sounding kind of stuffy. I apologize for that. But Texas fans will look at this Oklahoma State game tonight, 6 p.m. on ESPNU. And say, oh, this is a win. Well, I think KenPom's got Texas winning by about 3 points. I'm sure the Vegas line is something similar, probably like 2.5 or 3.5 or something like that. It's not easy to win on the road anywhere in the Big 12. It's not. And if Texas, you know, remember, go back to last year. Shaka Smart brought this up on Monday. Texas had a double-digit lead late against Oklahoma State. It looked like they were going to cruise to a relatively easy road win. And then their transition defense fell apart. They made a bunch of bad plays down the stretch, and Oklahoma State stole that game. I guarantee you Texas has heard about that game a million times this week. But that just goes to show you that, you know, if your guards don't play well and you don't make the plays late to win games, you can lose anywhere on the road in this league. In Texas, keep going back to this formula. If Coleman and Roach play well, if Hayes stays out of foul trouble, if Texas gets its deflections, which means it's playing with a bunch of energy on defense, and if they move the ball on offense, the ball just isn't stagnant, no matter what they're doing, they can win games in Big 12. If those things don't happen, they can lose to anybody on the schedule. And it's, you know, when you think about the West Virginia game, in some ways it's impressive Texas pulled out that game the way they did when you consider Hayes was in foul trouble. Roach did not play well for much of that game. He had 5 turnovers, was pretty much a non-factor for most of that game. Even late in the game, Matt Coleman was the one that was put on Bolden to defend him. And you know, Shaka Smart after the game said Coleman's been their best perimeter defender, which is a good thing for Coleman in Texas, but that should be Kerwin Roach. That's that's got to be his calling card, is defense first and then let the offense come to him. So he didn't play particularly well, although he stayed in the game and had an enormous tip-in late. Just a super athletic play to time a jump, sky over a group of people, grab the ball in the air and put it back in and put Texas up 53-50 late in that game. And I feel like Shaka made a good point about this after the game and on Monday. That's a sign of a guy that's staying fully committed to just trying to make plays. I think the Kerwin Roach of earlier this season wouldn't have necessarily checked out of the game, but I think he would have let how the game played out really affect him and maybe lower his, how often he goes and hunts for plays like that to be made. So, but Texas needs Roach to play better. They need Coleman to continue this consistent play he's had so far in Big 12 play. They need Hayes to stay on the floor. They need to move the basketball, and they got to play with energy on defense. That's their formula for success. And the defensive energy was good against West Virginia, although West Virginia really hurt them on the offensive glass late. What some of that was just West Virginia is really, really good at that. And some of the shots that Texas was forcing are ones that are a little bit easier to grab off of the rim. But some of it, too, is Texas' big guys got to rebound better. And Texas used some four-guard lineups as well. I think that that's something that we'll see tonight against Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State tends to, with Indiana transfer Curtis Jones now in the lineup, Oklahoma State tends to go with some smaller groups. They like playing Cameron McGriff some at the 5'6", 7" guys, super athletic, can kind of pull bigger guys away from the rim. So they will use some small lineups, and it's possible that Texas counters that with some four-guard lineups as well. It really might be forced to do that like it was against West Virginia when if Hayes is in foul trouble because Sims isn't playing. Royce Hamm was just okay against West Virginia. I think he played 8 minutes. Kamaka Hepa didn't play in that game because he's just not strong enough to play in that type of game right now from just a physical strength standpoint. I mean, West Virginia will beat you up in the paint. I would be surprised if Hepa doesn't play in tonight's game. And maybe, I don't know significantly, but I think he's going to play a decent amount when you look at the way this game matches up and how Oklahoma State really tries to run in transition. That's really the biggest key about tonight's game for Texas is Oklahoma State, really, if you force them to play offense in the half court, it's not a good offense. If you allow them to speed you up and force you into some questionable looks on offense and then they can get out and run, that's how they win basketball games. They're a good transition offense, and that's really for Texas tonight. One of the keys is just how they play in transition and especially how they defend in transition. So, again, you're listening to episode 19 on the Droppin' Diamonds podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangewoods.com, just going over here. Texas win recently this Saturday at West Virginia to improve to 2-0 in Big 12 play for the first time since the 2010-11 season. Of course, that season, notorious for, let me see if I can find the stats here real quick. 2011, yeah, 28-8 Texas was. Finished number 5 in the KenPom rankings. And that was the season where they had the slide in February after starting the year 23-3 and 11-0 in Big 12 play, including an 11-point win at Kansas that year. I mean, Texas was rolling. I mean, one of their losses earlier that year was a home game against Connecticut. I believe that was the Kimball Walker game where he went nuts late. Yeah, Connecticut ended up winning the national championship that year. So that Texas team was so good, and they were running this flex offense, which they had just installed, and Jordan Hamilton was thriving. Jacoban Brown was doing his thing. Tristan Thompson was getting easy looks in the paint. Corey Joseph was doing his thing. And then Texas got away from it, which is another story for another day. But, I mean, that's the last time Texas started 2-0 in Big 12 play. And, man, was that team good until February when it decided to get away from what it was doing so well. Lost 3 of its 5 final games and then lost that game against Arizona in the NCAA tournament in the second round, which, you know, we won't get into the inbounds call in that situation. But regardless, a game that Texas should have won. So that's the last time Texas has started 2-0 in Big 12 play. And a 3-0 start for this program would be massive. Not only just to get to 3-0 in the league, but then the Texas players are proving to themselves, hey, we can put wins together in this league. including two road wins. And I know Kansas State was undermanned, and I know Oklahoma State on paper is not the strongest foe, but winning on the road is hard. It's hard for any team. For Texas to potentially, if they can get to 3-0 with two road wins, that's big. That's a big confidence boost. It's a big boost in terms of NCAA tournament resume and the position in the Big 12. And then, you know, you look ahead to hosting Texas Tech at home on Saturday, an opportunity to get a big win and potentially move to 4-0 in the league. So, but they've got to get through Oklahoma State tonight, a game that I'm expecting to be a close game. I think it's going to be a game of runs. Well, duh, Dustin, all college basketball games tend to be games of runs, but especially this one. I could see Texas with a big run early. I could see Oklahoma State with a big run late first half, early second half to kind of create a tighter game down the stretch. But as I said, it really just gets back to Texas's formula. Good guard play, hey, staying on the floor, move the basketball on offense, play with energy on defense. That's their method for success. And if they do those things, I think that they're finding they have enough pieces to piece it together each night to be able to be in a position to win basketball games. Whether that's, you know, Courtney Raymond and Elijah Mitru-Long haven't been consistent for an entire game, but what they are giving Texas is really at least one good half. Those guys are a big part of sparking some things for at least a half recently. Elijah Mitru-Long had his moments, I believe, in the second half against West Virginia. Courtney Raymond had a great stretch in the first half where he was making things happen. So they're getting something from those guys. They're getting something from Jace Febres. They're not going to get at Kansas State every night, but even against West Virginia, when his perimeter shot wasn't really much of a factor in that game, he put the ball on the floor and drove to the rim well a few times, which is an example of him expanding his game and expanding his confidence. So they're getting something from him, and he's consistently competed well on the glass. I mean, he's a guard with some size. I think the rate at which he goes after rebounds is underrated. So they're getting something from him. I think that they know what they're going to get from Jackson Hayes when he's on the floor. I think they're starting to understand what they're going to get from Dilo Sikowski when he's out there. And if you listen to Shaka Smart, he feels like his players are starting to better understand what they have to do to win basketball games. But he's not ready to say they're ready to be a consistent team yet. He shied away from that on Monday, which I think that a win tonight would go a long way to for everybody in that program just feeling like, okay, we could become a consistent basketball team in this league, which is very, very difficult. So speaking of the league, it's again, I mean, as I've said before, it's a grind of a league. That's not going to change. But the way the league is kind of shaping up right now, it's kind of, I mean, it's not kind of interesting. It's shaping up to be kind of unpredictable. You know, Kansas announced recently that junior big man Udoka Azubuike is out for the season with a hand wrist injury. So he's out for the year. Sylvia D'Souza still awaiting NCAA clearance, which, I mean, I'll never say never when it comes to that thing with the NCAA, because who knows? But come on now, that guy, there's a reason he's sitting out, and there's a reason he's probably not going to come back. So if you look at Kansas's roster all of a sudden, basically the big guys are Dedrick Lawson, who's more of a kind of has like wing small ball four skill, so he's not a five. David McCormack is a true five, but a freshman that hasn't played a bunch. KJ Lawson, who's Dedrick's brother, who hasn't really played much. Mitch Lightfoot, who is a junior, and by now, I mean, Kansas hasn't really ever played him much. But I think more interesting than its front court, which I guess a guy like Udoka is a good way to aid the guard play. You look at Kansas' backcourt, and I mentioned LeGerald Vick earlier on, shooting 44% from three, can really fill it up when he gets going, but he's not a point guard. This is Devon Dotson was a five-star player. He's had his moments of being a really good player this year. Quentin Grimes, another five-star player. These guys are freshmen. And while their talent is immense, We know with you know, freshmen in the Big 12 sometimes can be very up and down. And this is – Kansas doesn't have a veteran guy to hand the ball to and say, okay, we need you to pick up the slack. We need you to run the show. We need you to get everybody else going, especially if Kansas goes with what is probably going to have to do a lot is these smaller lineups with Lawson potentially at the five. I'm not ready to say, oh my gosh, Kansas isn't going to win the league. I think that's way too premature. And I saw a lot of things coming out of the Iowa State game that, you know, Kansas isn't as talented as Iowa State. And, you know, all these sorts of things about Kansas' demise. Like, last time I checked, Kansas still starts a preseason newcomer of the year in the Big 12, two five-star freshmen, plays a bunch of other really good guys like Marcus Garrett, Gerald Vick, a senior playmaker. Like, I don't think it's a talent thing. Like, Kansas still has a lot of talent. Like, David McCormack barely plays and was one of the most highly recruited big guys in the entire country, a guy that Texas really went after. Marcus Garrett, to me, should have been a five-star prospect. He's definitely a more defensive guy than an offensive guy right now, but he's still a heck of a talent. So I'm not buying this idea that Kansas all of a sudden lacks talent. No, that's not the case, and I'm not ready to say Kansas is going to meet its demise in Big 12 play. Look, they lost on the road to Iowa State. Iowa State's really good, really good. A lot of teams are going to lose on the road to Iowa State. But what it does, though, is it forces Kansas to kind of encounter some things that hasn't really encountered much from the standpoint of there's not a junior or senior ready to just grab the basketball and run the show for 35 minutes a night. It's just not the way the roster is constructed. So Bill Self is going to have to figure out some different ways to really get the most out of this roster without a big guy to just throw the ball into that can get you some buckets. That's a great way to help your guards is if you, and Bill Self is really good at designing ways to get his big guy the ball in certain spaces and places on the floor. That's a way to help young guards grow up, is to take some of that pressure away from him. Now you're asking a lot of Dedrick Lawson. It's just added this wrinkle to the Big 12 that it makes it a tad more unpredictable. And if you just look at some of the teams, and there's not many teams that are what I would call, you know, just even teams from the standpoint of they're good at both defense and offense. Iowa State's been that way. Kansas is still ranked 26th in adjusted offensive efficiency, but if you look at the first two Big 12 games, Kansas is ninth in offensive efficiency. And it's shooting 24.4% from three-point range. Like, here's a dirty little secret about Kansas right now. It's shooting 34.1% from beyond the arc this year. Texas is shooting 33.7%. And Texas fans think the Texas perimeter shooting is the worst thing in the world. And they're barely behind Kansas in percentage points. So, I mean, the Big 12, I don't think has ever been this... I'm not going to say ever... It's just got a different, unpredictable vibe to it right now. And while Kansas remains the top dog and the favorite, they're going to have to basically not reinvent themselves. But they're, you know, it's kind of similar to what Texas had to do its first year under Shaka Smart, which was when Cameron Ridley went down right before conference play. I mean, he was their offense. He anchored their defense. He was their almost their everything besides Isaiah Taylor. And they had to kind of reinvent themselves and ended up having a good season in a very respectable season in conference play. So Kansas is going to have to tweak what it's doing and give itself a makeover. Iowa State's playing on a high level. Texas Tech is playing tremendous defense. Their offense hasn't been great, but man, can they flat out defend, and that's going to keep them in a lot of games. Oklahoma lost at Kansas to open up Big 12 play, but they've done a heck of a – Lon Kruger's done a heck of a job with that group, so – It's going to be fun to see how this all plays out because, you know, maybe if Kansas is just a tad vulnerable, you know, who knows what's going to happen. I think that this is going to be a year in the league where you're going to see a bunch of teams that potentially reach the 10-win mark. You're not going to see anybody win 14 conference games. I just can't see that. Heck, maybe I think 13 games wins this league this year, the way it's shaping up right now. You look at the projections, the KenPom conference projections currently, he's got three teams finishing 12-6, Texas Tech, Iowa State, and Kansas. And then he's got a group of Texas, TCU, and Oklahoma finishing with 10 wins. So the computers are projecting it to be just a constant back and forth type conference race where without one team running away from it. And that's kind of what I see right now too. But I think that the statements of Kansas' upcoming demise are very premature right now. We're only two games in the conference play. Let's see what they look like once Bill Self adjusts, once everybody knows, hey, the big guy's not here. We've got to play a different style of basketball and see what happens from there. So that'll wrap it up for today's installment, the latest installment of the Drop and Dimes podcast on theyak.com, episode 19. I thank you for listening. Again, Texas on the road tonight at Oklahoma State. Should be another tight Big 12 game. Should be a game defined really by what happens in the transition game. And if Texas guards can play well. If they play well, the Longhorns are going to have a chance to win the game late and get back home 3-0 in Big 12 play. If their guards don't play well, there's a chance that they're handed their first loss in conference play this year. So that's at 6 p.m. on ESPNU. And then looking ahead later this week, Texas hosts Texas Tech on Saturday at the Frank Irwin Center. We'll see if that is an opportunity for Texas to improve to 4-0 in Big 12 play. Until then, get to theyak.com/Austin. Check out all of our post-Sugar Bowl content. I see a bunch of hip-hop podcasts are popping up recently. There's recruiting podcasts. Now, with the first national signing day in the rearview mirror, Texas recruiting isn't done, though. And I know Jason Sukumel's been covering some of these offensive linemen and JUCO and potential grad transfer guys that Texas could be in on. So get to theyak.com/Austin and listen to all of our great content. And until then, I'll see you next time on the next installment of the Drop and Dimes podcast.